We're back at Module 3, and today in Lesson 14, we're going to scoot on over to the United Nations, so to speak, and deal with lobbying at intergovernmental meetings. Now, this is going to be part one of two lessons, and today I first want to look at the key parts of the preparatory process, and then go on into looking at some of the key elements during the meeting itself. Here, I just wanted to come back to this quote by Felix Dodds to remind us. Working at the global level can have enormous benefits. For organizations that want to set agendas to fast-track an issue or hold governments accountable to previous promises that they've had, it's good to be reminded of the vision and goal, because so often these can get lost in the nitty-gritties of day-to-day minutiae. Even if working at the United Nations is a dream that you've had for many, many years, still, once you get involved in the nitty-gritties of day-to-day work of lobbying, in the end, many times it is sending out faxes, drafting letters, talking with other people, meeting with people that you thought you were agreeing with you on something, but you discovered that you haven't, going back over old conversations, clarifying new elements of your work, and so on and so forth. And sometimes you just plain lose track of the goal that we do have when we go to the United Nations. Now, your preparatory process, my preparatory process, wherever we go, first things first, we have to clarify our goals. It's something that we actually have to constantly revisit and go back and do. Why? Because nothing ever stays the same. Individuals shift. I shift. My perspective on things shifts. I go back and I look at the goals, and all of a sudden, they're a little bit new. Or I can see how it can be refined, improved, and upgraded. Organizations change. The goals that we had last year need to be adjusted because either we've actually realized those goals, or new circumstances have arisen that mean that we need to adjust our goals. So the clarification process is not just a routine and functional thing. It's essential to you having clarity. And your clarity is directly proportional to how effective you can be in reaching your objectives. If you only have fuzzy thinking, fuzzy goals, rough approximations of what you're really after, what your organization is really after, I promise you, you will be far less effective. You won't be empowered in the way that clarity empowers you. You may find yourself out on a limb because you have pursued a particular agenda and only to discover that your organization no longer is willing to support that agenda. So you're out on a limb, and best case is you've wasted a lot of time and energy. But in the meantime, many times you will spend and waste your own political capital that you may have built up. I'm not going to define political capital here. Some of the terms and details that I will refer to, we will also go over in more depth in Module 5 as we look at advocacy. But suffice to say that there are times where you also have to look at and make judgments about the political capital that you have and where you can afford to spend it. Resources, when you're in the work of advocacy and lobbying, are not just financial, they're not just human resources, they are also the resources that reside in your relationships and in your social relationships, either institutionally or as an individual. So clarifying your own goals is so critical to not ending up in the wrong place, doing the wrong thing at what could have otherwise been the right time. Clarifying your own goals, those of your organization and your particular responsibility within your organization, is critical. And sometimes that's precisely for NGOs the place that is also very difficult. There is often an assumption for NGOs that, of course, we all understand the goal. And to re-engage people in their busy lives in rediscussing goals and objectives to some can be dismissed as wasteful. But let me tell you, if there was anything that is worthwhile spending more time doing, it's the clarification of your goals and your objectives in a particular situation. The work that you do up front, it will guide your research, it will guide your connections, it will guide whom you outreach to. It will set you on a trajectory that will either allow you and enable you to reach your goals the quickest way possible, or you'll end up taking a path, in the worst case, where you waste your time, you waste your resources, and you virtually trash and burn those precious, hard-won relationships. But continuing on through your preparatory process, research the decision-making processes of the commission, conference, or committee that you plan to be working within. Now, again, according to your NGO's agenda and the work that you're doing, you may be working with UN Development Program. You might be working with UNICEF. You might be working with the Environment Program. You might be working with women's issues. You might be working on the commission, or you might be working somehow with UNIFEM. Whatever it might be, you have to look specifically at the entity within which you're working. If you're working to lobby, you have to understand their decision-making process. So you have to understand your own organization's decision-making process. You have to have gone back and done your work in that, clarifying your goals and your objectives, clarifying what authorities that you have on behalf of your organization and what it is that you're specifically mandated to do by your organization. And you have to know the environment that you're going to be working in and how those decisions are made. If you recall when we talked about the decision-making process of consensus, you could begin to see, I think, in that, how if you're going to be working with a voting decision-making process compared to a consensus decision-making process, even the member states that you would outreach to are significantly different. And then how you outreach to them, what you say to them, what you encourage them, what elements that you of information you're bringing to them are quite different. So again, researching the decision-making process of the commission, conference, or committee that you're going to be working in is critical to you being effective in your work at lobbying at the United Nations. Now, stakeholders here. In any situation, there are going to be a number of stakeholders. And the stakeholders all have different value structures. Even when you go to, for example, UNEP, the Environment Program, you're going to have the stakeholders who are dealing with, if you're dealing with water issues, you may have stakeholders that are nations because the issues are how the flow of a particular river are controlled upstream and downstream. One country might be upstream, another one might be downstream. So right there, you've got two different countries. You've got one that can control the resource, the other one that is literally at the mercy of the other. Then you may have scientists who are involved in providing the information and the best information that they have available to them. And they've got a stake in things because sometimes their own livelihoods are dependent upon the work that they're doing either for that particular commission or organization, or the institution that they represent may have different pressures on them, or information that they have may be politically unpopular. None of these factors may be decision breakers, but they're all elements that influence the turbulence in the waters that surround the decision-making process. In short, each stakeholder has varying pressures coming in at differing angles on their involvement in the decision-making process. And it's often these invisible currents that influence many of the dynamics in decision-making far more than some of the more obvious ones. Then you have other NGOs that are usually involved somehow. Some of them are maybe involved with development of programs or alternative access to fresh water. Some may focus on wetlands and biodiversity issues. And still, there are other stakeholders. You've got the United Nations staff who manage all of these commissions and programs. They're concerned about different matters. They're concerned about due process, appropriate process, things that can make sure that whatever decisions are made will hold. They have a perspective on whether or not the engagement in the course of the discussions are actually creating the best possible environment for what they would call success and the outcomes of that meeting in terms of consensus. They may even just simply have the perspective of the history of having watched this type of dynamic going on for many years, and they too can appropriately or inappropriately have political agendas as well. My point here is that the many people involved in the process, each has a stake in the situation, and often their stakes are different. They value different things. The more that you can be aware of the different aspects that are at play on the floor in the discussion, the better a decision that you can make as to how to conduct your negotiations, how to enter into the discussions, and how to utilize the resources, whether those resources, again, be allies, time, the use of time left in the discussions, or whatever it might be. The more you are aware, the more of a chance that you have to better utilize the situation toward your objectives in the end. Continuing on, you need to not only understand their decision-making process, but the context of the decisions that are being taken. And this is actually where the UN staff can be quite useful, in that they have a more long-standing perspective on the UN context of decision-making. They understand that anything that takes place within the UN frame of reference, it is a different frame of reference and context than is a purely national discussion, or a purely academic discussion, or a purely political discussion. And we can gain insights and perspective from them. Part of your preparations are you need to research who your allies are. You need to find out, and you can do that through researching your documents. You can research previous commissions. You can research what's gone on in the discussions. As I had indicated in the last lesson, there are ways to be able to look back into the documentation of the United Nations. But even if you were not part of the discussion and the dialogue in previous sessions, you can do your own research. You can specifically ask some of your interns or your volunteers within your organization to find out who may be some allies that you didn't think you had. And then that gives you an indication to build into your plan to make relationship with those allies. Or even if you don't make relationships ahead of time, you can see the dynamic in the room if you understand that they are an ally and utilize that information to your best advantage, to the advantage not just of you as an individual, but to the best advantage of your agenda or concern. Part of your research needs to be is to find out which are the relevant government and UN officials, who they are, even their names, how many years they've been there, whether they've known a lot, whether they've experienced a lot. If you can find out, and that's why a lot of quote-unquote diplomacy goes on in the corridors of the United Nations, a lot of it is just getting the soft information. Whether a person's been around for a long time, are they well respected by their peers? Are they respected by some of the major stakeholders? Sometimes you can have a relationship with somebody, but many of the main stakeholders despise that person or don't respect that person. There are so many variables. The point is here, as best as you are able, in advance, research. Find out who's coming from a particular government to sit on there, to be member of that team, to be in that commission or conference. And if you can find out, that's good. If not, there are usually opportunities around the events or even at the beginning of the meetings, after the meetings, to meet people and to get a sense of who they are. That's all part of your research process. It's not just all cut and dried, and definitely in the United Nations environment, it's not just all internet or academic or traditional research type of research that needs to be done. A lot of it has to do with relationships. You also very clearly need to know your adversaries. You need, what is good if you can do, is to find out how they work. Sometimes they work by blocking. Sometimes they work by utilizing their allies. Sometimes they in the end may end up standing up or backing down according to what other priorities, political priorities that they have. Are they highly political, or do they simply use their weight as a big mission, for example? And perhaps in that sense, if you're working with a smaller group, a more unsubstantiated group, or on the periphery of a topic, or being somebody new to engage a new perspective that is not common knowledge, not familiar to everybody, perhaps you need to have done some work in advance to make some relationships with some of the mid, larger, or more generally respected stakeholders on that particular topic, so that you can find allies or create allies so that you can counter any adversary that you know. Sometimes you just have to deal with them directly. But many times, especially if you are an NGO, it's good to find a diplomatic ally who can sidle up to those who would possibly be one of your adversaries and help inoculate them with new or relevant information. Again, there are many different ways that you can work. But the key point here is do your research, find out who your adversaries are, so that you are not blindsided by any situation that you might meet in the course of the discussions. You also need to know the tools and the resources that you have at your disposal. And I've alluded to some of those just in terms of the resources, the human resources. Time is one of those resources. When you're negotiating, time can be a very powerful tool. And many of the seasoned diplomats and negotiators know well how to use time to their advantage. But you have other resources, there are other tools, and you need to research those. Some of them are financial resources. Some of them are just information resources, and you have to get them in place ready for you to use. So it's quite a task. And that's why, to some extent, you really need to look at it as an opportunity to really get out there and engage with other people in an exciting and dynamic way. Now, beyond the preparatory process, there are key factors to attend to during the process of negotiations. And once you're in discussion, in the process, is to know when to work at what level. Now, this actually connects back with my first point, which was to know clearly the goals of your organization and the mandates that you have to represent the organization and the objectives there. Knowing when to work at what level, you also have to know that the time to work at sorting things out in your own NGO is way ahead of the time of being engaged in the process. However, sometimes in the course of the lobbying process, the debating process, new information comes up that does need to be taken back to your NGO. And so even there, what that means is you need to be aware and alert that there are times to take certain information back to your organization or back to other stakeholders to reassess at that level and then to come back into the discussions and the negotiations again. So understanding that you don't always have full and free rein at every level just because you're there at the United Nations. You always still have to respect the organization, the levels at which you need to work within your organization and amongst other organizations, and to know when to do that. You need to know when to take a strong position or when to back off. This is a judgment call often, but there are indicators. And we do have to know our limits and the parameters within which we can effectively work. I just want to bring attention to the fact that, again, in intergovernmental meetings, NGOs are effectively guests, visitors, or we come in as experts invited in. We are there to support them. Now, we can be called upon as experts. We can be called upon either for information and at times to make statements within that intergovernmental process. But we do have to understand that primarily we are there as a guest of the governments. And so part of what we need to learn is how to be effective nevertheless. While you could end up saying, well, gosh, I wish we were just plain governments. But you have to remember that being the government doesn't necessarily give any extra freedoms. And in the long run, there are far more constraints on governmental personnel than there are on NGOs in a different way. So part of it is learning how to work within the system. And most, I would just have to underscore that the primary way that we can work as NGOs is by providing good, solid, innovative information, support, and solutions. And I think that it's helpful to see that, in fact, governments and civil society have complementary strengths. Sometimes that leaves us at loggerheads with one another, but many times if you take the time and to find the way to bring the civil society strength to the governments, then there are many things that can work out very well. When NGOs are solution bringers, not just argumentative, not just the oppositional person, you know, to make the effort to take the position, to find the solution and present it as a solution to the problem and not just to be battling things out in debate. But don't get me wrong, there are times for that too. And there are times to be strong and to stand in opposition. But there is no need for that to be the default mode for NGOs. The challenge of the negotiator, the NGO contributor, is to position your resources, your issue, your programs as solutions to problems. You see, part of the irony is here that many times, even though an issue or a program is in fact a solution, we don't always do the work in advance that translates into their mindset and frame of reference that what is being offered is the solution. Often they take it as being simply threatening, different, requires a change, requires more effort. That's often what it gets translated as. That's our work, is to show that the what is being presented is in fact a solution to their pain and problem. And especially in negotiations, whenever you can bring in that perspective, that is a key to being successful. Again, know your limits of authority, knowledge, or how you can leverage your potential. I kind of referred to these actually just as I was talking before. And the last one here is that know your brackets and terms. What that really means is to be able to look at the documents as you are proceeding through the negotiations. The brackets are used to explain what is being objected to by what countries. So you can get an indicator, or by what stakeholders, you can get an indicator from those what the sticking points are, precisely the points that have to be approached and solved in order to get the document moving forward, the drafting process moving forward, the consensus process moving forward. They can be seen as the main problems, or they can be seen as precisely the place where you can move in and use your most creative capacities and help be a leader, a change leader, and deal with and bring resolution and shifts and changes in the whole negotiation process. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes that really can happen. Terms, of course, you can go back to, you have to understand how the terms and the words are being used in the document, the way they are intended in the document within the UN context and not just in ordinary everyday language. And that's why in the previous lesson we went over where you can go back into the UN itself and you can find out more specifically, and this is part of your research also, more specifically how those specific terms are used in the UN context, in the multilateral environment context, and not just what they mean to you based on your past experience or your or how you use those terms as you're growing up in a family. So that really brings us all the way to today's homework. I hope that just following through this conversation has enabled you in your mind's eye to journey with me a little bit into the rooms of the United Nations and into what might be some of the discussions and the dialogues. So what I want you to do is, first of all, and it goes back to the first point that I made, and it is a very important point. What would you have to do to get a clear mandate from your organization to represent it on a particular issue? Maybe you already have one, but what I want you to do here is to think about this. What would you have to do? Who would you have to speak with? You would have to find out whether your organization is thinking about this topic, if it has a position on this topic, if they are willing to take a position on this topic. Would you have to draft your own concept paper? Would you have to do some research and present it to your organization? Or does your organization already have a whole group of people who have done a lot of research on this? So there, what do you have to do? What is your organization's process to be able to get a mandate or permission from your organization to represent it on a particular issue at the United Nations? Does it just mean you can simply pick up the phone and make one phone call? Or do you need to set into motion a series of efforts of your own? You may have to start with a research. You may have to start with a concept paper. You might have to see whether this is something that you can even do. Start with a concept paper, then do your research, go back, and then perhaps move forward again and say, okay, they've approved the basic concept. Now let me see what I can do in terms of very more specifics on it. Who would you have to work with in your organization to get that done? Who in your organization are experts in this area? Can you draw upon them? Can you utilize them? Can they help you pull together information on this? Before I move on to the second point, it's just a reminder that the United Nations is a place where organizations work together. It's not a place where individuals go to pursue individual interests. So even as NGOs, you are there to represent the organization and not just your own individual perspectives. If you know that you have the weight of your organization behind you, or if you don't, it makes a big difference to how you can proceed in intergovernmental discussions, what you can push for, what you can hope for. It will influence and affect the way you go about working in intergovernmental meetings. Now, the second one is, given that you already have an anchor for your work, we went over that way back in our module one, where I asked you to pick your own particular area. Given that you've already picked your own particular area, just I want you then to research what commissions or international meetings or annual sessions of ECOSOC would be appropriate for you to participate in. Find out. Go and do the research. We went over the UN body. I showed you many of the places where you can go in and find out where a lot of these funds, programs, commissions, related bodies, special bodies, subsidiary bodies, what they are, and where they can be found online. Look around and find out which one is the most appropriate for you, your interests, your organization's agenda, and pick one. Find it and pick one. And once you've selected that commission or committee or body, then you can begin to go back to the components of the work that we went over at the beginning of this lesson. You can begin to do the research on how does this organization, commission, fund, or program make its decisions. And that begins this whole process that we began to talk about earlier on in the lesson. I hope that you have found this interesting. I'm confident that you can see how a lot of the elements that you've already been studying now start to make sense and can be able to be pulled into discussions about how to go ahead and work at the United Nations. There's still a whole lot more fun ahead. I didn't have as many diagrams, didn't have as many pictures for this. A lot of this maybe is in your head, but I hope you could follow the conversation and the points. Very soon we're going to have a question and answer session, so plan on doing that. Write down your questions or send them on in. We'll accumulate them and begin to put them together for the Q&A sessions. But I hope, again, that you're already beginning to see that what you have learned already can make a huge difference in understanding how this all ties together and pulls together to make you effective at working side by side, shoulder to shoulder, with the diplomats and the NGO staffers at the United Nations to shift and change things at the global level. I look forward to seeing you for part two tomorrow.